the Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday morning on GCN, we expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, with military and economic schemes. If you listen, we'll open your eyes and hopefully change your mind towards many of these things to which most people cling. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, our mission will be to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh, that is God's one and only name, on his terms, by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with God's guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I or our guest this morning has to say is 877-300-7645. He was so terrific last week. We asked to have him back, and hopefully we'll have ongoing discussions with our guest. His name is Ben Barak. Ben has written a book called Unsung Davids, the 10 men who battled Goliath without glory. His website, which has a very active and detailed blog. In fact, it's an interesting read because Ben investigates stories and provides insights that most everyone in the mainstream media miss. But if you go to Ben, I'll just spell it, BenBarrack.com, you will find his website. Good morning, Ben. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Yada. How you doing?
Terrific. We have a headache gate that is fascinating everybody in the news. Now, I'm going to speak on behalf of Hillary Rotten Clinton, and that, I don't do that very often. But I can attest that there is a virus going around that that does cause extreme dizziness. My wife has just now recovered from it. She's been down the last 3 days. It is precisely what the Secretary of Hate says that she was suffering from. The news here is that, and we're going to just cover briefly the distraction, and then let's get back to the issue because this just gives us an opportunity to cover one of the most important issues, I think, of our day. You report that on December 10th that Hillary said that she was canceling her trip to the Middle East, where she is loved and adored, due to a stomach virus. And then she said she would be testifying on December 20th when the Accountability Review Board was going to present its findings to Congress about who knew what and when and why there were so many misleading statements about Benghazi. And then on the 15th, well, prior to that time, she says, well, the ARB hasn't finished the review, so maybe I won't be there. And then she goes, boom, bangs her head. Fortunately, nothing serious was at risk with, since it was her head. And she faints, and now we have no idea what's going to happen. Is that a pretty decent summary of the events?
You know, I almost, although I didn't go that far because we weren't there. We can't see that Hillary actually fell and hurt her head. My contention is that this is, regardless of whether that's true or not, it is very fortuitous for her to have done so. And I also contend the American Thinker had a good piece in there yesterday on this, that she should, even if this is all true, she should still testify. But really, when you get all down to the to brass tacks on this, we have a trend, not just of Hillary, but this entire administration, where it is stonewall after stonewall after stonewall.
Yeah, and ducking away from these things. In fact, Hillary, to give more credence to your perspective that it may be a ruse, Hillary used a similar excuse. That she was tired and not feeling very well, and the morning after the our ambassador and others were killed in Benghazi, as to why she sent out Rice as opposed to herself facing the questions. Is that not true?
Well, that's what Rice has contended. It's interesting because on November 30th, she answered a question from somebody in the press about why it was Rice instead of her, and her question floored me. It actually made Bill Clinton's meaning of is gaffe actually almost pale in comparison, because what she said was that she would not speculate or not address a hypothetical about what could have happened but didn't happen. This wasn't a hypothetical.
No.
Hillary, you did not go out in front of the cameras, and Susan Rice did. Why?
Right.
You know, and it's those kinds of word games that,
yeah,
that make one rightfully suspicious when you hear stories like this after all of these incidents where,
yes,
you know, she ignores letters from Congress, she can't,
right,
she can't go to testify because of that trip to Australia, then, you know, she sends Susan Rice out instead of herself, and now, you know, before it was learned that she wouldn't testify on the 20th because of this concussion, the excuse that was being floated out there as to why she might not testify was because the report from the Accountability Review Board may not be complete by then. Well, lo and behold, on Saturday, it's reported by Foreign Policy that she actually fell on Saturday the 15th, when a day later it's reported that she actually fell earlier in the week. And so you couple these,
yeah,
these inconsistent facts, inconsistent reporting, and you really have a situation here where now, yesterday, we learn that Hillary is going to be replaced, that there will be two Hillary Clinton lackeys testifying on the 20th, but suddenly the Accountability Review Board report is not an issue. It's done. It was done,
yeah,
yesterday, a day or two after they announced that
right,
other people will testify. So when she has to testify, that report's release is not known. But now that,
yeah,
somebody else is, well, the report's done and it's in the hands of the State Department already.
Yeah, let me tell you what I think the real issue is here. The president knowingly and purposefully is running away from the truth because he prefers a lie. And it is so thinly veiled that I think that Hillary Clinton, because she knows the president deliberately lied, and she actually supports the lie, she doesn't want to get caught up in case somebody actually exposes them in the mainstream media. And by her not attending, the whole thing ratchets down and there's less attention to it. There's two issues that are pertinent to Benghazi that are devastating, that are not being discussed. The first is that America, ignorant and indeed supportive of Islam, ignorant of Islam and supportive of Islam, armed the very jihadists who murdered our ambassador and three others in that embassy.
Right.
The very jihadists who want to destroy us. We armed the same jihadists who fought against us in Iraq and in Afghanistan. So America, thinking that Islam is good, armed the Islamic Mujahideen that killed our ambassador. Now, that's, you know, America has had a long history of manufacturing our next enemy. This is probably the fastest turnaround between arming an enemy and that enemy killing us that we have yet seen, and yet there is no one talking about this reality.
No, there isn't. And you have, for all intents and purposes, what we may learn, and there has been reporting about this from various sources, although not necessarily confirmed. It wouldn't be surprising based on what this administration has done with Libya and in Egypt, facilitating the fall of Mubarak to replace him with Muslim Brotherhood Mohammed Morsi.
Yeah.
You know, to what extent, and recently it was announced that we're sending troops to Turkey.
Yeah.
And obviously the position of this administration all along has been, and to include John McCain and Lindsey Graham as well,
sure,
Republicans,
sure, yeah,
has been to support the Syrian rebels. And we now
armed
know
Muslims
unequivocally that the Syrian rebels are Al-Qaeda. Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, the Sunni strain of Islam, everywhere across the Middle East, this,
yeah,
administration.
The Al-Qaeda connection is irrelevant, but they are fundamentalist Muslims.
Right.
And as fundamentalist Muslims, I mean, Al-Qaeda is an absolute irrelevant, almost to the point of being a myth. What's important is that the Sunnis who are fighting the Shias in Syria are fundamentalist Muslims. They are jihadists. They are the very people America says they're fighting the war against terrorism against. Now, What we know for certain is that the United States supplied weapons to Libya and is now supplying weapons to Syria through Qatar. We send the weapons to Qatar. Qatar dusts them with fingerprints. It's kind of like the Fast and Furious deal.
Yeah,
and it's very much Fast and Furious, for those who don't know, is where first the Bush administration and later on steroids, the Obama administration, supplied weapons to the drug lords in Mexico, but tried to dust our fingerprints off of it. The Obama administration specifically supplied weapons, American weapons and other weapons, to Qatar for the express purpose of them being sent to Libya and now into Syria, but to hide the fact that America was supplying them. We supplied the weapons that killed our ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is that not front page news? Now, the second thing that's far worse about this event is that the President of the United States is a demagogue. His war is against extremism. He sees anyone who is on the right, he sees anyone who is a Christian as an extremist. Now, I'm not pro-Christian, as you know, and I'm not pro-Republican politics, as you know, but this man has decided that his war is against extremism. He uses the term all the time. So rather than blame the attack on those who actually perpetrated it, and he knows who perpetrated it, was Ansar Sharia, fundamentalist Islamic group. He chose instead to say that the attack was motivated by a Christian movie about Muhammad. And when he did that, not only initially, but for weeks thereafter, when the very first report out of the Benghazi embassy said, it's Ansar Sharia.
Right.
That kind of a bold-faced lie on something this serious should have been enough to unseat him as president. He should have lost the election over it.
Right. Right. Well, and also, as far as the video goes, it's funny where you find kernels of truth, grains of truth coming out of the mainstream media once in a while. And in one particular incident, Joe Scarborough with MSNBC last week actually said that the reason, in response to the Susan Rice thing, that she didn't come in front of the Sunday shows because she was tired. Scarborough said, no, she may have been tired, but this was political expertise, yeah. Political season, woman versus an eager...
This is Chattering Miss. We'll be back in a moment. Chattering Miss, I'm your host, Yada. We're joined today by Ben Barak. Ben has written a book called Unsung Davids, and he writes a blog. He also does a radio program. You can reach him, read his insights at Ben Barak, B-A-R-R-A-C-K. com. We were talking about Benghazi. In fact, during the break, Scott, our producer, mentioned, he says, if Romney had actually addressed the president's malfeasance accurately, as opposed to saying, you didn't call it a terrorist act, which terrorism is simply a tactic. It's just like associating Sharia, Ansar Sharia, which is friends and supporters of Sharia law, with Al-Qaeda. All you're doing there is saying, this is one symptom of Islam compared to another symptom of Islam, and you miss the one thing that's important, which is these are symptoms of Islam. When you use the term terrorism, you're speaking of a tactic, and you do not identify the enemy. You don't identify the reason for the tactic being deployed. And so he focused on that as opposed to focusing on the fact that we knew it was Ansar Sharia and that it had been planned and that they used American weapons. If he had said that, it would have been an entirely different election.
Absolutely.
But he didn't. So you have to question, why didn't he say that?
Yeah. Well, there's all these consultants out there that tell these guys the best way to do things is to go for the middle, and you figure that you have your base in your pocket. But what these people don't understand, and this is my opinion on this, what these people don't understand is that with every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. When you give up the truth and the passion and the enthusiasm, right, that the base, the conservative right wing of this country desperately wants to hear from a leader. When you give that up to get the middle, you may gain a little bit in the middle, but you're going to lose a whole lot on the right. And we saw that in this recent election with a lack of turnout.
Yeah, I want to challenge you on that just a bit. And the fact that we'll disagree on some of our conclusions, that's great. The reason I love to have you on the show, you are extraordinarily well-read and well-informed, and you focus on subjects that expose both the left and the right in politics, which I think is spectacular. My conclusion is that the Christian right doesn't want to hear the truth. They don't want to hear the truth any more than the liberal left wants to hear the truth. The truth in America is that we have to cut the federal budget by 50% to survive.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to slash Medicare. We have to slash Social Security. We have to slash defense. We have to cut all of those programs by 50% to have any chance of surviving. I don't think that the vast preponderance of people on the right want to hear that.
Well, I think there is definitely truth to that. I guess what I'm saying is that there is an incredible leadership vacuum.
Oh, right there.
There was an opportunity, especially
correct,
this past election with the hard left wing evil socialism that this president is taking us towards. There was a perfect opportunity to contrast that, and he failed miserably.
Of course.
And to your producer's point about Romney not addressing that, there were that third debate in particular was an instance where he just gave it all away.
Right.
There were three things.
Didn't participate. Didn't even participate.
Right.
It's like the first one with the president. Didn't participate. If Romney had cited Obama's State of the Union address, where Obama spent the first 30 minutes trying to equate his plan for the U.S. economy to the U.S. military. The U.S. military is command and control. It's like a communist system. There is no free will. There is no choice.
Right.
And he kept on using phrases from each according to their ability, to each according to their need, the common good, all of this sort of thing. His entire State of the Union address was his blueprint, which was a communist plan for the American economy. And yet, here Romney, who has experience in the free market, couldn't capitalize on that. I mean, how could it have been any easier for him?
It was a slow, high-hanging curveball. And, you know, he had the second bite at the apple, as they say, because, as you mentioned on the second one, he swung and missed at a huge softball. But in the third one, he just took the pitch on several ways. But the notion, and to your producer's point, I mean, you mentioned Fast and Furious earlier. During that debate, what he could have done, three different things he could have done. One, you mentioned Benghazi. The second thing was, Mr. President, how is it that for 2 years your administration stonewalled an operation that was putting guns in the hands of Mexican drug cartels that were being used to kill Mexican nationals? Oh, by the way, if you have so much empathy for Mexican nationals and you want to grant them amnesty, how do you explain all these weapons being used to kill innocent Mexicans so you could push a gun control agenda?
We'll be back in a moment. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. We have a good friend and news guru, Ben Barak, as our guest. You can reach him at benbarak.com, BARRACK.com. Before we go to our callers, another good friend of mine, Larry, in Florida, who wants to speak on this issue. Ben, you ended by talking about Fast and Furious and the guns. One of the things that I was deeply troubled by, and I want to see if this bothered you at all. The man who gave the eulogy at the Interfaith service for Sandy Hook is the most egregious mass murderer in America. He has, at his personal discretion, killed thousands of men, women, and children using America's America's drones, and all without due process. It's murder. And he has thousands of souls whose lives he has extinguished. And yet this holier-than-thou hypocrite gets up and says, we have to stop this from happening. We need to come to some sensible agreement on weapons.
Yeah.
How in the world can a man get by with that when he has the legacy? And I don't know if you read the piece in, I think it was Esquire magazine. It was like a 15-page article about the use of drones by this administration and how they're deployed and how many people have been killed, and uniquely some of the stories of those that he killed. It was riveting. And so how can this hypocrite get up and make that kind of claim without anybody in the media saying, wait a minute, Mr. President, if you're so against mass murder, why are you the leading mass murderer in America? We have a good friend of this program calling from Florida. Larry, I understand you'd like to add to the discussion. Welcome.
Thanks. Good morning, Yada. I was going to ask, what do you know about Fast and Furious? What are they going to do about it? I mean, I understand that Benghazi's kind of, you know, fading away because Hillary fell down and bonked herself on the head last week and has lost her memory or something and can't testify anymore.
So, yeah, Ben, what do you think the future is of Fast and Furious?
Well, again, we get back to the point raised by your producer that there's no leadership. There's nobody confronting this issue. Now, with Fast and Furious, you had for 2 years, incidentally, and as a side note, Brian Terry's murder, the Border Patrol agent that was killed with guns put into the hands of these cartels by Fast and Furious, his murder occurred 2 years ago to the day of these Sandy Hook shootings. And these left-wing liberal apparatchiks came out with – it took them minutes to politicize that while they are still silent on Fast and Furious. I mean, they've said more, the Bloombergs, the Cuomos, Gerald Nadler actually said, quote, that the president should exploit the shooting. Meanwhile, these guys, and Nadler sits on the House Judiciary Committee, and so he's been present for a lot of these hearings on Fast and Furious. The only thing that could possibly happen is that the civil trial that's proceeding, the criminal trial that Holder was found in criminal contempt of Congress, that's not going anywhere because his subordinate is responsible for prosecuting him and has declined to do so. The civil trial is proceeding, and the only hope there is that a judge will rule that Barack Obama has to lift the executive order that is preventing the release of these documents that will explain a lot about what happened.
That's not going to happen, though.
Yeah.
That won't happen. When you say Nadler, are you talking about Gerald Nadler?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I mailed him some weight loss tapes. I hope he listens to them.
Well, he not only said outwardly, before the sun had even set on the day of those shootings at Sandy Hook in Newtown, that the president should, quote, exploit the shootings, but he then proceeded to go on Piers Morgan and say that the NRA is enablers of mass murder. And you just contrast that with the Fast and Furious. Look, the guy that shot in those kids in that school was the one sole responsible for those shootings. In Fast and Furious, this administration was responsible for not only putting guns in the hands of cartels to kill innocent people, but it was also doing so that it could create a climate where we're seeing right now with an gun control agenda being pushed.
Yeah, they said that was part of their agenda, and besides, there's only 50,000 dead in Mexico over the last few years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a deadly hypocrisy. But, you know, one of the things that, speaking of hypocrisy, blaming the National Rifle Association,
right.
You know that this year there have been a little over 12,000 murders in America. A little over 300 of those murders were perpetrated by a rifle, all forms of rifles. 300 versus 12,000. That's a little over 2%. So you want to blame the rifle for mass murder in America when 98% of murders in America are perpetrated with weapons other than rifles?
Well, I think that we should get rid of spoons because we have fat people, too. I mean, that's just me, though.
So why not get rid of ice cream?
Well, that too. I mean,
why don't we control every aspect of people's lives? I mean, the president says, I want to do everything I can to prevent this from happening. I mean, there is a way to prevent this from happening. The way would be to completely change America's education system so that we remove political correctness. Murder happens because people lack judgment. And the enemy of political correctness is exercising good judgment. And so it is our schools that are manufacturing these monsters. The second is, if more people were to read Yahweh's Torah and understand his instructions and to be guided by them, you wouldn't have any murderers.
It's about stealing and murdering. You know, the Ottoman Empire in 1911 established a gun control policy, and then subsequently from 1915 to 1917, about 1.5 Armenians that were deprived of a means to defend themselves were rounded up and killed. Happened later in the Soviet Union in 29 to 53, and they probably lost 20 million people. Then we all know that Hitler did the same thing in 38 when he established gun control. And,
yeah.
You know,
and where is the moral courage on the part of leaders in the Republican Party or conservative, powerful, I'm talking power brokers,
right.
The guys at the top of
right.
the chain, why aren't they enunciating these things?
Because they're owned by the same people. The CFR controls both sides of the aisle. I mean, everybody knows that. You know, my only question when I see these panels is, are they paid off? Are they being blackmailed? Are they being threatened? I mean, come on.
It's probably a combination of all three.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's where it's really at, isn't it? I mean, you're not going to vote people. And, of course, I, like Yada, I don't vote anymore. I see it's ridiculous. You can't take a construct like voting where they control the counting of the votes. I think this last thing was a sham. I mean, we had one political actor coming out while they were stealing votes in Ohio and hadn't even finished the count, hadn't even started the count in many places, and he just gave up and said, we all need to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. That's what he said. I mean, would you spend $2 billion and fight for that long and then just say, hey, I'm being robbed and that's fine? Would you do that? Unless you were part of the game.
As we speak of malfeasance on both sides and no one having the courage to stand up and tell people the truth, in the remaining time we have in this segment and the next, Ben, I'd like to get your insights on the fiscal cliff. But I'd like to put it to you from this perspective. Do you know who conceived the term fiscal cliff and falling off of it? Was that an American invention, or did that come from abroad?
I do not know where that came from.
Okay. Let me share something with you. The term fiscal cliff was first uttered about a year ago by the French woman that is now head of the International Monetary Fund.
Okay.
Okay, so this whole fixation, which is dominating the news in America, is an invention of the International Monetary Fund. Now, in America, when you hear about the fiscal cliff, all you hear about is that the rich should pay their fair share. The rich should be taxed more, right?
Right.
Now, do you know that the Bush-era tax cuts weren't the beneficiary of the Bush-era tax cuts were to a very minor extent the wealthiest Americans? What the Bush-era tax cuts did is they removed tens of millions of Americans from paying taxes. The reason that we had 47% of Americans that paid no tax and therefore had no concept of why lowering taxes would be beneficial is because they paid no tax. And are you aware that when the Laffer curve, I'm sure you understand that because from your perspective,
right.
You understand that the Laffer curve says that if you lower taxes, the government actually takes in more money.
That's
up to a point. That's up to a point. When you lower the tax rate on the most productive Americans, then they are more productive and the government takes in more revenue from them. But when you lower taxes to the point where most people pay no tax, you actually decrease the overall amount of revenue. And that's what the Bush-era tax cuts did. Which means if we want people to begin to think again and to realize why taxes can't be so one-sided, we need to go right off this cliff.
Yeah.
Hey, Yana, I have a question for you, and well, for
yes.
both of you. Are you both aware of the LIBOR scandal?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you studied the LIBOR scandal, Ben?
I'm vaguely familiar with it. But
you can sit around in London and just arbitrarily make up a percentage each day.
Well, it's not so much arbitrarily. What they did in London with the LIBOR scandal is they did the same thing that is done in the Federal Reserve, that the interest rates are set in a manner that that benefits those who lend money. And so it benefited the bankers who participated in the scam.
Right. It's the biggest banking scandal of all time.
I would say that the central banks as a whole are the biggest banking swindle and scandal of all time.
Scam, I agree with that.
But Larry's point here, Ben, would be that that with the LIBOR scandal, just as with Fast and Furious, just as with the myth that we're fighting a war against extremism, is that when you see lies of this scale being perpetrated and being excused and being covered up, then you have to wonder as to whether or not the media and politicians are in cahoots with one another, and that whether or not the deceptions are being orchestrated as opposed to just being a series of random chance events. We'll return to the final segment of the News Hour of Shattering Myths in a moment. You can join this discussion by calling 1-877-300-7645. To Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We have as our guest today Ben Barak. You can read Ben's book, which is called Unsung Davids, by going to Amazon.com, or you can read Ben's blog and have access to his book by going to BenBarak.com. Ben, before you comment on the fiscal cliff, I want to just share two other things. One is that if we go off this thing called the fiscal cliff, there will be actual cuts to defense, and I think that is necessary. The United States outspends the rest of the world combined on its military, and if we were simply to observe the protections offered by the Second Amendment of the Constitution and allow Americans to bear arms without restriction, we would need a military because it would be impossible to invade and occupy this country. But second, that I think the way this is going to turn out is that Boehner is going to agree to tax increases, but only on the most productive Americans, which will be counterproductive to our economy and the deficit, and that he's going to do so on promises of spending cuts, and the only thing that may be cut is the rate of increase in Social Security benefits. What say you?
Yeah, and on top of that, we're looking at him potentially caving on the debt ceiling. And you know, the one card that he could play that he looks like he's ready to forfeit. This guy is somebody who just does not have the ability to execute the job that he is charged with. He is the most powerful Republican in the country, really, when you look at it. The third in line to be president, or second in line to be president.
He looks like the Chicago Cubs. I mean, really, he looks like he got beat before he ever got started.
Well, he's always got a kind of got that look to him, you know, ready to cry at the drop of a hat. And my gosh, I mean, it's just there's no will there to negotiate the right deal. And I think there were three ways he could have gone, and he's deciding to take the worst of the three, in my view.
I agree too.
Are they going to unfund the Obamacare, or are they going to watch this economy really tank? I think they're going to let that go through, and then people that think they're in poverty now are going to find out what poverty is. What do you say, Ben?
Absolutely. I mean, we're going. The thing is on a trajectory to collapse. I mean, that's undeniable. And what's amazing is that these people individually at these levels must know that. collectively,
right.
they operate out of sheer stupidity. And you know, it's mind-boggling. But really, you had the same thing in World War II. You had the system in UK, and the people just weren't ready to confront what they were going to have to confront until a catastrophe happened. And unfortunately, I think we're in that boat, and it's beyond the point of no return.
There's a difference, Ben, this time, which is that the catastrophe has already befallen us, and there is no means to extricate ourselves from it. We can't resolve the issue.
With the health care.
Right. We can't resolve the issues of our debt. Our debt right now is $16.4 trillion. It'll be $20 trillion by the end of the Obama administration. And we actually have another $40 trillion in unfunded mandates through the Ponzi schemes known as Social Security and Medicare. This is not resolvable. And so what Americans listening to this program ought to be thinking about is, why should I be patriotic? Why should I invest in American politics when those leaders have taken us to this place that have destroyed America's future? And why should I trust them? Why should I rely on them? Why should I elect such individuals who have taken America to this place and have destroyed its hope for our children? And they ought to then think of, is there anyone or anything that I actually can rely on? Is that we are within 10 to 20 years of absolute anarchy in America, because this cannot be resolved, which is why we devote the second half of this program to the Torah. You know, I'm sure you know Craig Smith, Ben. My guess is that you have you've either had him on your program or you've crossed paths with him in the past.
I do.
Yeah. To my way of thinking, where I think that you are the most insightful guest available to speak about the issues of American politics, particularly what's wrong in American politics, I think he is the most informed individual in the country relative to our economics. And I made a statement during our last interview together that it was my opinion that based upon the fact that a $20 trillion deficit was not sustainable, that America was within 10 to 20 years of absolute collapse, losing its sovereignty. And he said, I'm way too optimistic that we don't have that much time. Ben, it's been my pleasure to have you as a guest. I hope you'll join us again. It is benbarak.com, and it is Unsung Davids is his book. I would recommend both. We'll be back in a moment.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of...